Welcome to It's About Time. This is a show where we talk about the acceleration of our lives in this culture, and we examine ways that people are challenging this trend and trying to do things differently. Today, our guest is Bill Dougherty. Bill Dougherty is a professor at the University of Minnesota, where he's also the director of the Marriage and Family Therapy Program. He's a co-founder of Putting Family First, which is a grassroots organization of parents. He's been one of the leading researchers and educators looking at the overscheduling of children's lives. Now he's taken on the topic of birthday parties. Why is this important issue? Why is it something we should pay attention to?
Well, birthday parties are, we think, a wedge issue into the consumer culture of childhood and family life. On the surface of it, what's the big deal about birthday parties? But they are a window into something much larger, and that is the pressure that parents are feeling now to provide more and more, to do more and more for their children in a consumer culture.
Okay, so this is just an issue that represents something, a much greater problem that we're looking at.
Yeah, if you take this problem on at the 50,000-foot level, you just sort of have platitudes about, simplicity and about why people shouldn't be so extravagant. This is about our children. This is about something. These are decisions we make every year, and this is about our children growing up as little entitled customers in family life.
So give us some examples of how this has gotten out of control, what it looks like. Yeah.
Well, it starts with one-year-old birthday parties. That's how I got interested in this when my grandchild was born. And, 6 months along in his young life, my daughter was already getting pressure about what kind of bash she was going to throw for him when he turned one. And her line was, he won't even know he exists at age one. here's an example, a local here from Minnesota. A mother with very little money, really, spending $600 for a birthday party for her one-year-old, catered the American Legion Hall party for 30 adults, and the child slept through the whole thing. And the mother put it on credit cards, and, she didn't have the money, but she wanted to do what was right for her child.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then a three-year-old in a small town in Minnesota, the parents rented, they had actually two parties. The first was at the fire station. They rented the fire station. And then the second party, they rented a private club. And the invitations referred the guests to a registry at a local toy store.
Wow.
Yeah. See, weddings have moved down, down and down and down. Now three-year-olds.
Right, right.
And then here's a story a mother told me, and this is the kind of attitude that we fear with children. This mother decided to have an at-home party instead of outsourcing it the way most people do. And she had a nice party, a nice theme. Her daughter at the end of it said, her eight-year-old daughter said, it just wasn't magic enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where do you think that the kids are getting this idea from, that every birthday party should, first of all, even that you should have a party every
mm-hmm.
year,
mm-hmm.
and that it's got to be magic?
Yeah, they get it from their peers once they get into the school age years. When they're teens, they watch the MTV show My Super Sweet 16.
Mm.
So they pick it up there. The three-year-olds don't know the difference, but by the time they're seven, they start to. And so it becomes an expectation, really, for presents, for being a prince or princess. Here's an example of how parties turn into just consumer fairs for kids. When you invite a lot of children, which now a lot of kids do, you have big parties, it's a lot of presents. So one mother told me her son looked out the door the day of his party, and there was another friend of his coming along. He said, look, another present.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Mm.
One parent said that they got 52 presents Her son got 52 presents for his birthday. When you count the friends, you know, with the 25 kids and the relatives, he got 52 presents. So they decided he would open one present a day for 52 days just to continue the good feeling.
Oh, boy.
And then what do you do with the junk?
Right.
I mean, the thing is, when you have that many children coming to the party, the parents don't really know what your child really likes, you know, so they just bring stuff along. And then what happens is you have to give gift bags, party bags.
Right.
Right? And so, you know, and in our neck of the woods, those are about $10 each. It really mounts up. In fact, we have interviewed parents, mothers, who admitted that they went back to work to get part-time jobs to finance the party circuit.
Wow. And I was going to say, then your child's invited to one of these parties.
That's right.
Or to 10 of these parties, and you need to get a present that's, you know, equal.
What, $15 to $20? And so, yeah, you can, with the norms of reciprocity, right, if your child gets... If you have 25 children come to your party, then those invitations go out. There are some classes now, some schools that make this hard because they insist that if you invite any child from the class, you must invite every child from the class.
Right.
And this is based on some ideas that it's really terrible for kids' self-esteem to not be part of everything. Now, I can understand, too, you know, you don't walk into class and with invitation cards and, you know, skip some kids. But a private party,
mm-hmm.
How many friends does a five-year-old have?
Right. So, oh, gosh, what do you think is the extension of this? Like, what, you know, what do you worry about with this overindulgence? What's going to happen to these kids?
Well, our big concern is the effect on children who come to feel entitled to more and more, bigger and better, who complain when they don't get everything they want, who actually complain, we have a lot of stories of this, who complain that the gift bags were not good enough. I mean, one five-year-old looked in the gift bag he was going to go home with and said, "This is junk." Yeah. And we have cases where the parents have decided not to have gift bags and give kids a piece of candy or something to take home. And in one party, several children said, "This is a ripoff."
Mm.
One kid said, "You should have told us before we came that there weren't going to be gift bags." That kind of entitled attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Then by the time they're in their teenage years, we're hearing from a lot of parents who are saying, you know, "Help me deal with my teenager who at age 14 is already lobbying for the Super Sweet 16. So it's children then feeling the sense that they are the center of the universe. My line is that every child is a treasure, but no child is the center of the universe. Not understanding that their needs, their wishes are not necessarily their needs, and that there are a variety of priorities in the family.
Right. And so why are we as parents doing this? Why are we indulging the children this way?
Well, it's a complicated issue. For me, there's several parts to it. One is that we live in a supersizing consumer culture. More is better, bigger is better. And today's parents have very high expectations of themselves. We really want to raise our children to succeed in this competitive world. Parents are more anxious. We have this idea that if we don't keep up with what other parents are providing for their children, that our children will feel disappointed and devalued. We want them to feel very special. And we have more, you know, more affluent parents. You put that all together, and what we have is a kind of an arms race going on with this, with a small segment of parents pushing the envelope every year, moving from, you know, horses are so passé, you know, so now it's llamas, you know,
uh-huh.
you keep moving up, you know, and then the limos for the 7-year-olds and so on. So some parents who are competitive, you know, who kind of live through their children, push this, and then the rest of the parents don't want to fall below the par for the neighborhood and community, lest their child feel disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
So it just keeps getting ratcheted up year by year. It used to be you had a little party at home, you know, some cake and ice cream, and you know, we didn't even do presents when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, there were family presents, and then you go to Chuck E. Cheese, you know, and then that's old, and then you keep go to on and on and on. You start hiring clowns, and mm-hmm. and then one clown is just like everybody does a clown. So you have a clown and a magician, and your child comes back from these other parties saying, "That was so cool! I loved it. Mm-hmm. Can I?" And then you do it, and each year it goes up and up and up. So look at what's happened to hamburgers. Look at what's happened to so many things in our society. We ratchet it up, and we want our children to feel special.
Now, you mentioned the parents don't want their children to feel disappointed, and that I totally can understand that, you know, it's good for kids to deal with disappointment. But then you said devalued. Does it make kids feel devalued to not be able to do what their friends are doing?
Well, it doesn't necessarily make them feel devalued, but they can take that on, that feeling, if parents don't really communicate their values with regard to this. So what I talk to parents about is when you're not going to spend $600 on the party, when you're going to have something simpler at home for, let's say, for a smaller number of children, explain it in terms of the values behind it, how your family does celebrations and how you think about friendship. Don't necessarily put everybody else down, but explain it from your values. If you simply get irritable and say, "We're not going to spend that kind of money, you don't need that kind of party," then you are facing a risk that in this consumer comparison culture that your child can misinterpret that you just, you know, you're too mean-spirited or something. I before I get into the birthday party thing, I was into the issue of overscheduled kids. You know, everybody's on the traveling soccer team, and it's the same kind of thing. It's the difference between saying, "I don't want to be spending my weekends driving you everywhere," versus, you know, as a family, we need some balance, we need some time together, and you need some downtime, and we think having more weekends around the home is better for everybody. Those are very different answers. So this is an opportunity for parents to really articulate how they see their families.
Because I have thought, well, it's easier for people with less money because you can just say, "We can't afford that." And I've talked to parents who have more wealth, and it's harder for them to find ways to say no.
So. Yes. And I think that money is, the money excuse is often a cop-out for middle-class parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because if your child needed expensive medication, you'd get it in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to mention, though, is that a colleague of mine has done a study of low-income mothers who feel the same pressure to do more for their kids than they are comfortable with. And so, you know, a single mother, a low-income mother who has trouble putting food on the table will spend $85, $100 for a birthday party for each kid and not have it.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is the middle class sets the standards, but then lower income parents feel guilty. It's the Air Jordan phenomenon, you know.
Yeah.
You save your bucks so your kid can get expensive sneakers so they feel good in their peer group. So it's really quite pernicious throughout the whole culture. But here's the story about the money part of it. A mother who heard me talk about my view that if you're a middle class parent, you should not use the money reason, because money stands in for values. Speak to the values, not just the money. Well, she said she wished she had done that because she's in a neighborhood with a party circuit where there's, you know, 30 kids, you know, who get invited to all these parties, and they have them at the country club, and it costs a lot of money. And and she just, and her husband said, this is too much. And the money was part of it, but basically they didn't want to do that whole thing. So, but what she said to her friends was, you know, that's just too much money. We're not going to do that. We're going to have a smaller party at home. Well, her friends raised the money. It was sort of like she was saying, our kid needs treatment for leukemia. And so they raised the money. And she felt she couldn't say no. So they ended up having the same thing.
Wow. That is a really interesting cultural phenomenon.
Isn't that something?
That people don't feel comfortable even with their neighbors not being able to do it or not, choosing not to do it.
Yeah, you do a fundraiser so the kid can have the birthday party at the country club like everybody else. Sweet, yeah. It brings tears to my eyes.
Thanks for staying with us. Today we're speaking with Bill Dougherty about children's birthday parties and looking closer at this culture of overindulgence and how it may be affecting our children. Okay, so I have tried to ratchet down my daughter's parties, and the past 2 years actually not done parties, I'm proud to say.
Okay.
Although, so what I did instead was provided her with a great experience. So we went skiing 1 year and we went to a Broadway show 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Can we spoil our children or indulge them with too many experiences?
Oh, very, very interesting. See, I think we can overindulge with experiences if we're not careful.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an example of one of the mothers in the Birthdays Without Pressure group. She decided to cut back on the spending, and what she did, she spent weeks designing the crafts and the costumes for this thing. She made every girl's leotard, you know. It was a very creative event. And as the parents left, one of the mothers said, well, the bar has been raised.
Mm.
Okay? Well, that wasn't about money, but that was about creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So, the danger would be that each year, you know, so it's Broadway. Where do you go after Broadway? London. London has great theater. Okay?
Okay, thanks for that.
You know, fly your daughter to London. You know, and then, like, that's so, like, European, you know. I'm sure there's something in Asia. So none of these things are bad. But, you know, so I think of, you know, something like that, you know, for a really very special birthday. I have a friend who's now in Italy with her granddaughter. She's told her grandchildren when they turn 12, she'll take them somewhere in the world, okay? I mean, then they look forward to that for years. You know, it's a really big deal. But I worry about the every year bigger and better.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So how do we go about changing these norms?
Well, we change the norms by starting the way you and I are starting, by having a conversation about what's going on. Because we are social creatures, you know, we raise our children in packs. So we need a conversation about what's happened to these norms of what I think are excess. We need to look have the values conversation. We need to have the conversation about the pressures we're feeling, and then both individually and, you know, in peer groups of parents, experiment with some change. So I'm glad to know that there are really little pockets of parents around the country who are trying different things. They're trying things like starting with not having party bags, gift bags, you know, that you don't have to spend the $10 on that, to have a really nice time at the party and, you know, give the kids a little treat or something like that to take home. Even more radical, there are more parents now having gift-free parties with their friends. They have presents with the family, but with the friends, they are saying, you know, your present is really to come. There are parents who are donating presents to local charities.
Right.
So the change is occurring. There are parents who are saying, instead of having a big party this year with a lot of people, how about you invite your three closest friends, and we'll do a sleepover, and we'll have a really cool time.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is they're talking about it. They are going public with it without apology. And that's the beginning of the change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading on your website about a I guess it was a mother who was saying that she thought for her 10-year-old that a sleepover, that the kids would be bored. And I just thought, how is that possible?
Yeah, very interesting. You know, there's no professionals involved.
Right.
We really think that unless we're paying for something, it's not really worthwhile for our kids. We have to get over that.
Yeah. When, you know, I have seen this with my own daughter. When you have kids over and you just let them run around outside, they're having the best time they could ever have.
Absolutely. A local parent told me that they have about 7 kids in this circle, this neighborhood, who have birthdays around the same time. And one of the mothers had gone to hear me give a talk about all this and came back and again began the conversation. And what they decided to do this year was to have a joint birthday party for all the kids in the park, cake and ice cream, no lunch, you know, no dinner, cake and ice cream, no presents, and games and free play for the kids. And the kids said it was the best party ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what parents need to hear too, I think, is that what kids remember and what they hold on to are those kind of activities and events, not necessarily the llama or whatever.
Right, or the you know, Chuckles the Clown.
Can I just jump back to the values issue? And I know that you've talked about one way to talk to children is what you call the citizen vocabulary.
Yeah.
And can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. It's really thinking about not just oneself, but about the family, about friends, about, you know, planning a party, for example, with your child, to think about that you are really inviting your friends. And what kind of what would be fun for them, and how can everybody have a really good time? Some parents are talking with their children about a time you receive presents or money is a good time to be thinking about what you might contribute to other children in the community who may not have as much as you do. Another way to think about being a citizen of a family, I know a family with 4 kids, where they each year a different child gets a party. You know, they all of course get their birthday acknowledged in the family with a little party, but in terms of a bigger party, and what the parents do is talk about it in terms of sharing time and attention, and each year a different child does, and being there for your sibling, really making it special for your sibling, is a way to be a citizen of the family. It's just not all about you.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if parents listening want to do something and they feel that they need some support, because really it is hard to do this, to just make this kind of a change within your own family and not get some support from others around you, I think. Right,
right? Absolutely. It is hard.
Yeah. So what do you suggest people do?
Well, I suggest they go to our website first, www.birthdayswithoutpressure.org, and read and feel supported and read stories about other parents. And then have a conversation if they are, you know, raising their child with a spouse or partner, have a conversation with that person first. Talk to some friends about the idea of shifting birthday parties to things that are less pressured, less extravagant, and then begin to have a conversation with your child about it as you think ahead about the party, of doing some things that are different, that would be fun, and that would be, you know, that maybe cost less and are less hassle. If they want to think about small places to begin, I mean, they can be thinking about numbers. So reducing the numbers reduces a lot of the stress and hassle. They could think about having it at home instead of out, which, by the way, these are all interconnected, because if you think you have to have 15 or 20 children, not many people can have that many kids in their home, and you need all these other adults to supervise.
Right.
So there's some small things you can do. You don't have to change everything at once, and you have the values conversation all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Great. And, of course, this can reflect other parts of your life, too, that you can start rethinking about how we keep thinking that we need to do more, give more to our children. And
that's right. It's a great way to really crystallize all of that, because this comes up every year, and the expectations go up every year. So it's a sort of a beachhead into this whole issue of how we raise our children.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much, Bill. And
you're welcome.
And for you, what comes next? Do you have some other... What's the next one you're tackling?
Well, you know, the next one that's sort of out there on the horizon, nothing specific yet, is the sexualization of our little girls with the clothing and the Britney Spears and all of that, particularly the clothing. I'm hearing a lot of anger among mothers about what it's like to raise their daughters in this culture nowadays.
Yeah, that's a really important one. Thank you for all the work you do, Bill, and for taking time today.
Oh, my great pleasure.
Okay. Take care, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to our program. We always love to hear your comments and your story ideas and any thoughts you have about the show. You can email them to itsabouttimeradio@comcast.net. And this show has been produced in association with Take Back Your Time, a national initiative challenging overwork, overscheduling, and time poverty. You can learn more about them at timeday.org.